The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
We've had some ups and downs. I think we've had some great moments, and we've had some moments that are a little bit disappointing. So, to me, it's early in the season. You know, we continue to compete. I would say that the best is yet to come for our group and what we're capable of and what we're gonna do. So, I love the fact that we are a relentless group. We're a group that's stuck together. And we're working through some of the issues that were the problem, and we'll come out on the other side. I feel very confident about that.
Defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio yesterday, after he was asked to evaluate his defense after the first six games of the season. The show today, as always, presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate. You've got nothing to lose. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. We've had some ups and downs, Jack said. We've had some great moments. We've had some moments that are a little bit disappointing. The Chicago game was more than just a little bit disappointing. But look, his defenses have improved as the seasons have gone along. I mean, take the COVID disaster at the end of the year and really that Cleveland game last year. That was a big spot. That was not an end of year stellar performance in a big spot, that's for sure. The defense really gave up way too much against a Cleveland offense that had not generated much against anybody, and it cost him a playoff spot, that's for sure. But he says, we're going to come out on the other side. He feels very confident about that. Good defensive performance last week. I think the yards were a little bit misleading. Not that they were misleading, but there was a lot of good during a course of a game in which really the offense went dormant after the first half, and the defense had to pretty much shut down the Falcons with a 14-point lead, which they ultimately did with the help of three turnovers. Very similar opponent this week in the Giants. My keys to a win over the Giants coming up here shortly. My prediction on the game in this first segment as well. Jay Gruden will join us in the next segment, and then I'll finish up the show with the smell test. If you haven't had a chance to rate us or review us and you want to do that, it's really helpful. Apple, Spotify in particular, allows you to either rate it or rate it and review it in the case of Apple. Subscribing to the podcast is a big deal for us, and following us on Apple and Spotify is a big help as well. Real quickly, last night, the Jacksonville-New Orleans game. I was watching everything last night. Perhaps many of you were as well. I was watching the baseball. I was watching the college game in which I had action. More on that coming up in the smell test. And I was watching that Jacksonville-New Orleans game. Man, does the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints, Derek Carr, look miserable right now. He looks just unhappy, yelling at virtually everybody on the field, Chris Olave, his coordinators, coaching staff. I haven't seen Derek Carr that way. Not that I followed Derek Carr's career closely. I've never been a massive fan of Derek Carr. Jay Gruden, and obviously his brother, John, big fans of Derek Carr. Cooley was always a big fan of Derek Carr. I just always thought he was, you know, middle of the road at best kind of a quarterback. That's a decent team in New Orleans. He's not playing well. I don't think everybody on offense is playing well for him. I'll ask Jay. He knows Derek Carr and why there might be some frustration there. But the game was interesting in that there was nothing offensively to write home about for three quarters, especially for New Orleans. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, you know, New Orleans down 24-9, scores twice, converts on a two-point conversion. Then they give up a touchdown. Then they get the ball back, and they drove all the way down the field. And they were about to put up their third touchdown of the quarter in the fourth quarter. But the tight end, Foster Moreau, dropped a wide-open touchdown pass on third and goal. They missed on fourth and goal, and that was it. The Saints lost 31-24. By the way, that makes it 10 out of the last 11 for the AFC over the NFC. You know, that's a good thing if you're an NFC team. You want all of the other NFC teams to lose all of their games against AFC teams, because the AFC wins don't hurt you, and the NFC losses do. But that's if you're in the boat that I am in, which is rooting for ourselves to go have a season, as Steve Saban likes to say. Let's go have ourselves a season. And I'll tell you what, if we're going to go have ourselves a season, then Sunday's game is not necessarily must win, but it's a need to win game. You can't be taken seriously by anybody if you lose to the Bears and the Giants over a 2.5 week period. You just can't. The Bears were winless. Washington lost by 20. The Giants have one win, and perhaps even more importantly, as it pertains to Sunday, if they were to win against Washington, they're a team decimated by injuries. You kind of have to win this game on Sunday. Look, I'm not sure at this point in the NFL season if there's a team incapable of winning on any given Sunday. You know, the Carolina Panthers are pretty bad at 0-6. They're the only winless team in the league. The Giants are 1-5, yes, but let's not forget that their five losses: Dallas, San Francisco, Seattle, Miami, and Buffalo. The combined record of those five teams, 21-8. And I would say that at least three of those five teams, San Francisco, Miami, and Buffalo, are considered right now to be legitimate Super Bowl contenders. There are probably still some people out there that think Dallas is. I don't. And I don't think Seattle is a Super Bowl contender, but Dallas and Seattle are certainly playoff contenders. You have to kind of consider that with the Giants' start here. They have not been a good team. They've been a very injured team, but they've also had a brutal schedule. The one sort of easy game they had, they were down a bunch in, but they came back and beat the Cardinals out in Glendale. You know, every other game, again, against either a Super Bowl contender or a legitimate playoff contender. And their last outing, Sunday night in Buffalo, on the road, they were right there. They lost the game 14-9. They were at the one-yard line at the end of the game with a chance to win it outright on the road with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. And they got completely hosed on a missed call on the final play of the game. So I am not dismissing the Giants as a team incapable of winning on Sunday. In fact, stay tuned for the smell test, although you probably shouldn't trust that these days. But the Giants have proved they're capable of playing well, you know, despite all of their missing pieces. Last week, the big piece back was Saquon Barkley. He clearly gives them a chance that they just didn't seem to have much of without him. Daniel Jones is still iffy as the recording of this podcast is taking place. I just checked right before we started to record to see if there was any news. Brian Daboll apparently earlier today said, you know, we're going to take it up until as long as we can take it up until. Right now, he's not been cleared for contact at practice, but they have not ruled him out of the game on Sunday. Tyrod Taylor is a veteran quarterback, as most of you know. The offensive game plan doesn't change that much with him in the lineup, with one exception, really, and it's been one of those things that's actually hurt Washington a lot in their head-to-head with the Giants, and that is there's not a lot of zone read. There's not a lot of designed run with Tyrod Taylor like there is with Daniel Jones. But I don't think much else will change with Tyrod Taylor in the game. Their offensive line has been the hardest hit area of the team by far. I mean, it is nothing like what they expected it to be before the season started. Andrew Thomas likely out again. You could argue he's one of the top two or three players on the team, their starting left tackle. The center that they drafted from Minnesota, John Michael Schmitz, appears to be out again. He was a starter day one. He was somebody, by the way, that Washington liked in the draft. Evan Neal's likely out. Shane Lemieux, one of their key backups who's played, just went to the IR. I mean, it's a total disaster on their offensive line right now. It reminds me a bit of when Washington had that year in 2017. In fact, maybe I'll bring it up with Jay. When they had that stretch in the middle of the season where just one offensive lineman was going down after another. They lost at home to Dallas and then miraculously won at Seattle with like two to three guys that had to introduce themselves in the locker room to their teammates. Defensively, the Giants rank very low in a lot of areas defensively. But I think that might be a little bit misleading. I mean, right now the Giants defensively per DVOA are ranked 28th. I think they're 31st per PFF in ranking defensively. I think they've got decent players on defense. I'm not going to give out the warning that I gave out about Atlanta's defense a week ago or about Chicago's offense the game before that. I don't have any sort of, you know, look out for because you're not paying attention. They're actually pretty good here. The only thing I would say is that Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, these are really good defensive tackles in this league. Kayvon Thibodeau, we know what he's capable of doing. He did it to Washington in that second of their two meetings last year at FedEx Field, had the sack, fumble, and the return for touchdown. I think they're suspect on the back end, but I think their linebackers are a little bit better than people think. I think McFadden's played well. I think the results and their rankings in part are due to the fact that they haven't had any offense, which means they've been out on the field a ton, and they have faced Miami, San Francisco, Buffalo, Seattle, Dallas. But again, just as a reminder, they had Buffalo shut out through three quarters last week. Completely shut out. However, with that said, I'm not going to say this is a should-win game. This isn't an organization right now or a team that you can say this is a should-win game. There really are, you know, only a handful of teams that have should-win games. You know, Washington's in that vast, you know, group of, you know, 25, 26 teams that they're determining right now, are they in the upper middle or the lower middle? You know, I don't know that the Giants are in the middle right now as banged up as they are, but when they're healthy, they're certainly in the middle of the league somewhere in the middle. I thought before the season started, the Giants would be in the upper middle for sure. I liked their team before this season started. I was dead wrong, but it's hard to really judge the Giants at this point because of the injuries that they've had. And again, the schedule that they have faced. But if you're going to be a contender in a very weak NFC on the back end, right? Because after Philadelphia, San Francisco, and Detroit, after that, you know, if you want to throw Seattle and Dallas into that mix, have at it, okay? The NFC South will have a champion, but right now Tampa is the leader at 3-2. But there's going to be, you know, there are going to be a lot of teams in contention for, you know, the seventh spot, maybe even the 6-7 spot. Let's see what happens with the Cowboys during the course of the year, with Seattle during the course of the year. I would bet that Seattle ends up with double-digit wins. I think that's a pretty good football team. Dallas somehow will probably get to double-digit wins, I guess. I'm not overly impressed with Dallas, but they're a better team than Washington. But, you know, even if it's just for one spot, I mean, take Philly, Dallas, Detroit, San Francisco, and Seattle and the NFC South champion and say, okay, there are right there six of your playoff teams. Then you're talking about, here's where the battle comes in for a seventh spot, right? I'm going to exclude the teams that have terrible records right now. Washington, Green Bay, Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans, the Rams. That's the group that you'll likely be competing with, because I don't see the Bears getting back into it at 1-5, or the Cardinals at 1-5, or the Panthers at 0-6, and probably not the Giants at 1-5. I mean, these are the games. I think I said it before the Chicago game. These are the games that you'll look back, if you miss it by one game, and say, how did we lose to them? You know, when the Bears are 4-13, how did we lose to them? When the Giants, you know, continue to have one of those years where the injuries just mount and they end up 3-14, how did we lose to them? You know, you can afford to lose to maybe one of them. You can afford to lose to one bad team. You kind of got to make it up with a win over a really good team at some point. But if you lose to the Bears and the Giants, two teams that may combine when all is said and done for 21, 22, 23 losses or more this year, you're probably not going to be the seventh seed in the NFC. So this is a big game Sunday. They're not going to cancel the rest of the season if they lose. They're not out of it if they lose. They could come back and shock Philadelphia the following week at FedEx Field. But look at what they have moving forward. Like this, you know, now that we're in it, I'm not saying that it kind of looked this way actually before the season started too, but this is the portion of the schedule, right? The Bears, Falcons, Giants, you know, then the Eagles, then the Patriots, who are not a very good team. You got to harvest some nuts right now. You know, you got to get this game. And then you've got back-to-back wins. You're a game over 500, which, by the way, would ensure that you're 500 or better going into the month of November, because the Philadelphia game, as I'm looking at the schedule right now, is the last game in October. Man, season's flying by. Here we are, week 7, and it's already the third week in October. But if you can get Sunday, then you're no worse than 4-4 heading to New England in November. It's been a while since they've gone into November 500 or better. So I don't want to look ahead too far. I mean, the Patriots game certainly wouldn't be an easy game. They're pretty good defensively. The Seahawks game the following week, I mean, look, they're in the midst of 4 road games and 5, with the one home game being Philadelphia. But this is a need to have Sunday. You know, there was that feeling after the Chicago game that instead of being, you know, 2-3, they felt like they were 2-10. And then they get the win in Atlanta, and it's like, all right, well, they can beat the Giants. If they lose to the Giants and they're 3-4, it's going to feel like 3-8. And this is the time to get this team. Their starting quarterback is either going to play and probably not, you know, at 100%. Or he's not going to play, and their offensive line's in tatters, and they've got some injuries on defense in the secondary as well. So, anyway. All right. Want to mention real quickly the Window Nation deal. Call them right now at 866-90-NATION if you've been thinking about new windows. Pause the podcast. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Mention my name. You heard it on the podcast, and they'll take good care of you. If you've got windows that are older, 10 years of age or older, if you've got windows that are hard to open or hard to lock when you close them, they're drafty, they're leaky, you need new windows. You're losing a lot of money with higher heating bills in the winter, higher air conditioning bills in the summer. You'll save up to 30% on your energy bills with new windows, and your house will look much better. Now's the time to take advantage of it, too, before winter gets here and because of the deal that Window Nation is offering. Their deal right now is buy two, get two free with no limit. If you need 10 windows, you're only paying for 5 of them. And you don't have to pay anything until the year 2025, because for 2 years, there's no interest charged with no down payment or no payments required for 2 full years. So if you think you need new windows, give Window Nation a shot. They're some of my favorite people. They're fans of this podcast. They're fans of the teams that you root for, although they are Cleveland guys, Harley and Aaron are. But because they've lived here so long, they root for the Terps. They want the Skins to do well because that means more people are listening to the podcast and the radio show and consuming sports. So take advantage of a great group of people out at Window Nation. They really will take good care of you. This will work out if you choose to buy windows from Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. All right, let me get to my keys to a win over the Giants and a prediction, and then we'll get to Jay Gruden. All right, first things first. I think this game is so similar to last week's game against Atlanta. Atlanta is a team that wants to run the football. Atlanta, I told you last week, was much better defensively than most of you thought. I think the Giants are better than their ranking indicates, but they're not as good as Atlanta. Atlanta's actually a really good defensive football team. And look, Washington struggled offensively after the first half, and they needed the defense to step up with turnovers. But I think as you look at the Giants, the key to beating the Giants starts with stopping the run, stopping Saquon Barkley. Last week, it was stopping the run against Atlanta. Atlanta wanted to run the football. Whether it's Daniel Jones or Tyrod Taylor, you're going to have to slow down Saquon Barkley. He is a difference maker, and they looked like a completely different team offensively last week. The good news is stopping the run, if it requires more than just their base 4-3 or their Cinco package, their five-man front, you know, if maybe they want to walk, you know, another, they want to put another linebacker on the field, or they want to walk a safety down into the box, they can do that because the Giants just aren't anywhere near the threat that Atlanta was, even with Desmond Ridder. I mean, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Mack Hollins, Jonnu Smith, they had some dudes. You know, the Giants really don't. Like, I'm not even a big Waller fan. Slayton, you know, is okay. Wandell Robinson's kind of tiny. They're just not capable of beating a team that's stopping their running game from beating them exclusively through the air. I don't believe they can do that. You know, with Daniel Jones, you'd have to worry about the scrambling capability, and Tyrod Taylor can move around a little bit as well. But if you stop the run Sunday, if you shut down Saquon Barkley the same way you shut down Bijan Robinson, you're pretty much there. Now, you're not completely there, but I'd say you're about 75% home on a win. One or two other quick points on the overarching number one point, which is stop the run, the number one key. You got to be disciplined once you start stopping the run. You even have to be disciplined before you start to stop the run, because the Giants will probably anticipate Washington will be, you know, loading up the box, you know, intent on stopping the run. And against that five-man front, the Cinco package, which Ron's referred to this week as more of a 3-4 because, you know, you got Montez and you got Chase as those outside defensive ends. Chase plays up in a two-point stance. Makes it look a little bit like a 3-4 outside linebacker in that case. In his case, anyway. You never see Montez do that, or rarely do you see him do that. But you can get off of that front play action and boots. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor and Daniel Jones, I could see the Giants coming out initially trying to go play action and take some medium to long shots. I could see them, you know, running some bootleg and getting it out to Waller or a wide receiver real quickly. I could also see them running a lot of screens, which they have run a lot of this year because the offensive line's so bad, they can't really protect that long. And even last Sunday night, you saw the quick screens. I'm not talking about the quick wide receiver screens. I'm talking about the play action with Barkley, who then turns around almost immediately, you know, just barely outside the tackle box for a quick push pass to get the screen going. So you just have to be disciplined. They've got to stop the run, but they've got to be disciplined in doing it. I'd also, you know, be a little bit leery of like this guy Wandale Robinson on fly sweeps, on reverses. The Giants know Washington's capable of shutting their run down. I think that they are. You know, if they don't, it would be an extreme disappointment. But the Giants are probably going to try to loosen it up a little bit early on. So stop the run, but be disciplined in stopping the run. Number two, you can't give this game away. This is the cliche turnover thing, the mistake thing, the self-destruction thing. But when you've got two teams like Washington and Atlanta last week, to a slightly lesser extent this week because, again, the Giants' health, you've got two teams that are both capable of winning this game. You can't hand it to them. You know, you can't hand an offense that really is unhealthy and has struggled. You can't hand them the ball. And they've been good at this. They've been good at protecting the football here. You know, they were last week. They were against Philadelphia in the games that they've played, you know, well in. So you just have to protect the football. Do you need to be plus three this week to beat the Giants? No. But if you're minus two, could you lose the game? Yes. So, again, a cliche key every week, you know, but it's the kind of team they've had for a while, and it's the kind of team they have this year. You know, they're not good enough to overcome, you know, self-inflicted mistakes, turnovers in particular. Lastly, they will beat the Giants if they protect Sam Howell. But hear me out on this one. So the Giants now are the third straight opponent for Washington, Chicago, Atlanta, and the Giants, who will come into this game at the bottom or near the bottom of the league in sacks, in total sacks. The Giants have five total on the season. They are dead last in sacks right now. Last week, Atlanta was 31st in the league with five sacks, and they got five. The week before that, the Bears had only two sacks through four games. They were dead last in the league, and they got five. They more than doubled their season total. Could Washington overcome five more sacks to Sam Howell and beat the Giants? Yes, they can. They did last week. They needed help from the Falcons. You know, a lot of that was defensive force too, but the Falcons turned the ball over three times. They self-destructed at the goal line with the delay of game and the getting in the plays late before that interception to St. Juice. But they can overcome another terrible sack day from Sam Howell. But I think if they are clean on the turnover side, and they start to make progress. Sam starts to make progress. You know, the offensive line, everything. But remember, you know, we have now kind of determined with some of the advanced numbers that are out there that this is a Sam problem more than it is an offensive line problem. But if he could cut that in half, you know, two and a half sacks, you know, let's just call it two sacks or no more than three, they could really win easily for the first time this year. Every single game they've played and won, you know, the 2-point win over Denver, the 4-point win over Arizona, the, you know, 8-point last week, but with, you know, the Falcons knocking on the door in Atlanta. I mean, if you take away that Dallas meaningless season finale, which was not meaningful to Washington, they haven't won games easily. The game in Houston last year was pretty much it. And they did dominate a bad Houston team that particular day. If they don't go backwards, if there's not another 35, 40 yards and lost, you know, sack yardage, which forces punts, which forces, you know, sometimes field goals or missed field goals if you were in, you know, touchdown range, but you get backed up to field goal range, even without the turnovers, it'll hurt them and you'll probably be in a tighter game than you need to be in. If he finds those incompletions and he can cut that sack rate down, then I think they could win big. I'm not predicting that. You'll hear my prediction in a moment. But I'd really like to see big picture and even immediate long-term picture and even immediate picture. I would like to see the improvement start Sunday against the Giants. Let's not see Sam, you know, getting mugged in the pocket because he's holding on to it too long and taking, you know, another 5 sacks, which would keep him on track to break. Look, if he takes 0 sacks this week, he's still going to be on pace to shatter the record. But he's going to need a couple of 0 to 1 sack days to get out of that range. Anyway, you did not hear me, other than protecting Sam Howell, talk much more about the offense in this game. I just don't think it'll take a whole lot offensively to beat the Giants if they can stop the run. And if, you know, they don't turn the ball over, you know, to the Giants and shorten the field and give them scoring opportunities. I think that they will, you know, have a really good chance to win just doing offensively what they've been doing, which is at times being very effective, at other times not being effective, but as long as they're not turning over the ball, you know, so be it. All right, my final score prediction. By the way, just as I started to record this, Washington, all systems go. Kendall Fuller is good to go Sunday. That was the last, you know, concern health-wise. Washington, extremely healthy. The Giants, not so much. Washington's really been a healthy football team for the most part. I mean, the loss of Derek Forrest and Jeremy Reeves, you know, hurts, especially on special teams with Reeves, and they miss Forrest too. But relatively speaking, Washington is, you know, on the good side so far when it comes to injuries. All right, final score prediction. Washington wins the game, but it's much tighter than we want it to be. 20-19 Washington. Last week I gave you 21-19 Washington. 20-19 Washington. Brian Daboll's team, you know, gets a touchdown late and he goes for 2 and they miss. And he says in his post-game presser, you know, at home my belief is you go for 2 in the win. On the road I kick for the tie. It's the opposite of what Ron Rivera said in 2020 in the Meadowlands after they lost to the Giants 20-19 and they missed on a 2-point conversion at the end. 20-19. I'm not going to be surprised if Washington wins by a larger margin, and I'm also not going to be floored if they lose. We've already seen it happen to Chicago. They're capable of laying a big fat egg. I will tell you this, though, that if Saquon Barkley wasn't back and, you know, Tyrod Taylor was quarterbacking, but or even Daniel Jones, but if Saquon Barkley weren't in the lineup, my final score prediction would have been more like 30-13. And by the way, the Skins wouldn't be a 2.5-3 point favorite. They'd probably be more like a 5.5-6 point favorite. It's probably too many points for Saquon Barkley, but it is too many points. They'd be a 4-4.5 point favorite for sure. But he's something else. He's one of the, you know, he's one of the three or four at that position that are true difference makers. But I do feel like this is a need-to-have game that hopefully they'll play with the same level of energy that they played last week with. And if they do that and they don't self-inflict with turnovers, et cetera, they can get a win. See, I almost said it. I almost said should win. They can get a win. 20-19, Washington. Jay Gruden next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing, but you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
All right, joining me as he does every Friday during football season, the former head coach of the Washington Redskins, Jay Gruden. We'll get Jay's thoughts on the league, and we'll get his lock of the week, which last week came through again. I think you've won your last three locks of the week because you gave out last week the Dolphins. By the way, I bet the Panthers.
Correct.
And I think that's three straight weeks that you've given out a lock of the week winner. So stay tuned,
everybody.
Yeah.
I'm taking a bow right now as we speak.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't hurt yourself doing that. So the discussion this week, and really for the last few weeks, has been about the sacks that Sam Howell's taken. You know that he's got 34. He's on pace to shatter the record set by David Carr back in 2002. And there's a lot of data out there, Jay, that suggests that, you know, sacks are not one of those things that typically improve statistically. Like, your sack percentage when you're a young player tends to be a pretty stable rate. Like, I can't imagine that he could survive at this rate, so it may not be something that gets measured. But the question that hasn't been answered about that is why? Why do you think quarterbacks that tend to have a flaw in taking sacks more often than other quarterbacks do, why doesn't that improve typically? I mean, there are examples where it has, but more times than not, it ends up being steady.
That is a great question. I never thought of it that way. Some quarterbacks have a strong desire to complete balls and wait for things to develop maybe too long in the pocket, and then when things break down, they're stuck. They get stuck with it instead of getting off their first read to their second read and third progression as fast as they can and getting the ball out. Some quarterbacks are naturally better than that. Some quarterbacks just take more time in the pocket to see things. They don't see things and anticipate things quite as well as others, and that can be a problem. The quarterback job is to anticipate throws, anticipate throwing windows, and get the ball out to the right guy depending on what the coverage gives you. And like I said, some quarterbacks are quicker at recognizing that and some are not.
Do you see anything specific with the number of sacks that Sam's taken that would be a consistent reason as to why he's doing that?
No, that's the issue, I think. I mean, sometimes clearly he holds onto the ball too long and does not abort mission quick enough when plays aren't there. You know, I used to tell quarterbacks all the time, don't make a bad play worse. And sometimes he does that. Sometimes it's a combination of pass protection. It could be a player. It could be a protection issue as far as going to the right people or allowing free runners. So there's a combination. It could be the left guard. It could be the right tackle. It could be a protection scheme, and it could be Sam. It's a combination of a lot of things, and unfortunately, if it was one thing, it'd be easy to correct. But it's not just one thing. It's a combination of a lot of things, and that's why they have so many sacks.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much data, as you know, out there, and a lot of the, you know, pass-blocking data that's out there. I mean, PFF has Washington's pass-block win rate as eighth best in the league. Next Gen has them at 13th in the league in terms of their pass-blocking unit. PFF's put, of the 34 sacks he's taken, they've essentially put 14 on the offensive line and 20 on Sam. I don't know how much you buy into all of that data, but if we just take the data as Sam's taken more of the sacks have been on him than anything else, and you see him holding onto the ball, you mentioned processing and throwing with anticipation. Are those things that can be coached up and improved to a point where sacks no longer are a big issue and he moves to somewhere in the middle of the league in terms of sack taking?
Yeah, I think so. I think the more he sees these concepts, people have to realize this is the first go-round for him.
Right.
As far as seeing concepts against different coverages, and obviously you're playing a different defense every week with a different set of coverages. Some teams play the same type of quarters of cover two, but some teams have different versions of cover three, and some of their fire zones are different. And also, you know, we put it on the line and the quarterback, but sometimes it's the backs, and sometimes it's the receivers not getting the separation they need to. So, but I do think that as the season goes on, as his career goes on, these can be correctable. The more he sees some of these similar concepts against the coverages that he's seen, he'll know where to go with the football a little bit quicker.
Give me the list of things that are important for you when you're evaluating a quarterback, whether that's a quarterback that might be in the draft or a quarterback that you might be looking at trading for or signing in free agency.
Obviously, production. You got to make sure he's producing at the level that he's at, and consistency. You're looking for consistent production. Obviously, the skill set you need to see. You got to see arm talent. You got to see the anticipation, and you got to see the mental and physical toughness. You know, the mental toughness you can't really see unless he gets hit in the mouth a couple times and he still stands in the pocket and delivers a throw later on in the game. I think Sam displayed that at North Carolina. Actually, his junior year, he was really good. In the senior year, a lot of people left him. He got hit a lot and sacked a lot, but he still stood in there and made some plays. But yeah, arm talent and obviously ability to escape and extend plays is critical for a quarterback in this day and age. If you don't have that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, you know, pocket awareness and anticipation and arm talent, you better be able to move. And especially for these younger kids, you know, when they're, you know, even those great quarterbacks that I mentioned struggle earlier in their career because they're new to the game, the speed of the game, and all the new concepts and coverages they're seeing. It takes time for those guys, so it's very beneficial for a quarterback that can move in the pocket and extend plays for your offense, especially on third down. But mental toughness, physical toughness, arm talent, accuracy, and there's so many things that it's hard to pinpoint one. If I had to say one thing, he's got to be a great leader, and he's got to be obviously have the arm talent to make the throws.
Is there a quarterback that pops into mind that you evaluated at some point, whether, you know, before a draft or before free agency, that you were right about, that, you know, everybody else was maybe not right about?
In a negative way or a positive way? Positive way, as far as I think we were – you know, we drafted Andy Dalton in the second round. We spent a lot of time with Andy, and there was like six or seven quarterbacks in that draft ahead of him. And I'm not saying he's the perfect quarterback, but he's had a pretty damn good career. And you know, we ended up getting him in the second round. He was very productive for us at Cincinnati, and we actually liked him ahead of about five quarterbacks in the first round, and we were right about that. That's for sure. You know, Ponder, Jake Locker, there's four others, I believe, Gabbert. Yeah. Yeah, so there's, you know, so we were right about him. I would say Colin Kaepernick was in that draft. So I'd say Andy Dalton. We just liked him because he played 3 years at SMU or at TCU. He's a tough kid. He's very productive. He could move in the pocket. And they did a lot of concepts. Their offensive coordinator was very good at the time. They did a lot of concepts under center in the shotgun, some zone reads. They did a little bit of everything, and he was productive at just about every. He wasn't the greatest arm talented quarterback we ever saw on tape, obviously, but he was very effective and could make all the throws.
When you brought him in, when he finally arrived in Cincinnati, how long before you knew this guy? Because you drafted him in the second round, right? Was he second round?
Yep.
How long did it take you to figure out, yeah, this guy's definitely going to be an NFL quarterback?
Well, we had to make that decision right when we got in the building. He's the only guy we really had. So the good thing about that, we had no competition for him.
Uh-huh.
We had picked up Bruce Gradkowski to be his backup because I love Bruce as a guy. He's a great mentor for a young quarterback. And if something happened to Andy, we felt good about Bruce getting us through a season or a game or whatever. But Andy was our guy from day one, and that helped because he got all the first-team reps, every single rep in preseason. And we didn't even have OTAs that year because it was a strike year. So he came in right in training camp, took every rep in preseason games, and we were able to grow with him. We were able to see what he could and what he struggled with, and he was able to get as many looks and reps as possible. And we always feel like reps are the king for a quarterback. They have to get reps. Reps, whether it's one-on-ones, whether it's team reps, whether it's seven-on-seven, continue to get reps so they can develop and see the concepts and know where to go with the football when shit hits the fan.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually pretty interesting, right? Because in today's game, you wouldn't draft a second rounder and not think about having somebody else on your roster that would likely start that rookie year for him, even if you believed in him long term. And so you think ultimately that benefited him from because you drafted him in the second round and he was your starting quarterback day one.
Yeah. Because Carson Palmer left. He didn't want to be a Bengal anymore, and we really didn't have anybody else on the roster. We had Carson's brother, Jordan, and we had, I forgot the other kid's name. But that was all we had. You know, we drafted AJ first because, you know, Chad Johnson and T.O. left, so we had to get a wide out, and it was between AJ and Julio, and it was a coin flip, basically, but both of them were great. Happy as hell to have AJ. He's a great player, and we needed a quarterback, and we got Andy in second. If Andy would have been taken, I thought Andy was going to be taken by Seattle that year, but they ended up taking the guard from Alabama, which I couldn't believe it, and he fell right to us. We were begging Mr. Brown to trade up and get him, but he was right again, Mr. Brown. We waited for him. He fell right to us.
Well, you know, when you were here, I mean, we know that Haskins wasn't your pick, but the only quarterback that you guys ever picked, I think I'm right about this, was Nate Sudfeld, right? Is he he's the only quarterback other than Haskins, which we know was Dan's pick. He was the only quarterback drafted. Were there quarterbacks along the way from the moment you got here in 2014 until you left that you wanted to draft that you didn't?
Not that I can recall off the top of my head. You're always looking for a quarterback to try to develop in-house, especially, you know, when we had the Kirk Cousins deal and we had Colt McCoy, obviously, but you're always looking for a younger kid because, you know, you can't keep him forever. Kirk had his issues with the contract and all that good stuff. But we felt really good about Kirk as our quarterback. And when you have that and you have other needs, major needs, whether it's linebacker, defensive pass rush, offensive line, whatever it is, you got to address those. And by the time you get to the fourth, fifth, or sixth round, you know, it's difficult. I know there's Brock Purdy's of the world, and I know Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick, and so on and so forth. But the odds of that happening, getting a quarterback of that caliber, are pretty slim. And we had so many other needs that, if you feel good about your first and second team quarterback, that's kind of, you put that on the back burner a little bit.
Right. All right. What did you think of them last Sunday against Atlanta?
You know what? I thought defensively it was great to see them step up. Turnovers are huge, and they haven't been able to turn the ball over as often as they probably would like. And to get three interceptions was huge and a big punt return. Defense and special teams are going to be gigantic for this team moving forward. They got to play great defense. They got to get turnovers, and they got to play great on special teams. offensively, they're still a work. They have a young quarterback, and they're still a work in progress. And they'll get some points here and there, but they got to play great defense, and they got to get turnovers to switch the field position and the momentum. And they did that. That's great. It's crucial to do that, especially on the road.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of special teams, Jamison Crowder with a huge, you know, punt return in that game. That was, you know, a guy drafted when you were here out of Duke. Did you, in that draft, did you love Crowder? Diggs was still on the board.
Yeah, we love Crowder. We actually loved, we actually loved Tyler Lockett, too.
Yeah.
He was in the draft. We actually were going to take him in the third round, and we ended up trading that pick to Seattle. And sure enough, Seattle took Lockett. We're like, what the hell? Shady. But we ended up getting Jamison, who had a great stint for us as well. He's a good, great slot player, a good punt returner.
Do you remember how you guys had Diggs evaluated?
You know, I don't remember. I don't know if we had him. What round did he get drafted in?
Fifth. And he was in your backyard at Maryland.
Yeah, we had him here for the, you know, you have that day where you have the local guys come in, the local pro day.
Yeah.
And he was here. He didn't work out. He just kind of sat on the side and seemed like a good guy. We didn't really have him graded that highly for some reason. And I don't really, you know, we missed on him for sure. I don't know if we had a red flag on him for something. I don't know if he had injuries or what, but he really wasn't mentioned a whole lot for some reason. And that was a major miss because he was right in our backyard. He's one hell of a player. I don't know how we missed on him, but we did. That's one guy that I clearly regret not doing more work on. But for whatever reason, I didn't do a whole lot of work on him, and I don't know why. I don't know if he had an injury, like I said, or if he had some kind of red flag or what.
All right, Giants on Sunday. They shut down Bijan Robinson. They held him to 2.8 yards per carry, 13 carries, 37 yards. Is that where you would start in terms of keys to a win, stopping Saquon Barkley?
Absolutely. You have to. And I think there's an ability, especially against the Giants, to bring an extra guy in the box because the receivers don't really scare you. I think you go Saquon, then you got to figure out where Waller's at. Waller's got to get more attempts for the Giants because he's really the only threat they have from a receiver standpoint. And Daniel Jones obviously running if he plays or whatever obviously has to be a factor, keeping him in the pocket and not allowing those guys to run.
There's a possibility it's going to be Tyrod Taylor again. Does the game plan defensively change significantly with him at quarterback or not?
I don't think so. I think they still have the same pass concepts they're going to use, and they still have to worry about him running. I don't think they use as many quarterback design runs as they would with Daniel Jones with Tyrod, but obviously he can run and he's very athletic. I think more of a zone read type guy with Tyrod, more so than the quarterback powers and things of that nature they used with Daniel Jones. But I think you just have to cover him down and play your coverages. But I would actually work on a lot of coverages where the safety's in the box, more cover threes and three carries, whatever they want to do with that. But you got to get an extra guy in the box for Saquon because he's the one guy that can control the game. He can control the clock. They are a ball control type team. They want to get yards on first down and get this third and short, and that Tyrod uses legs and work Waller in the slot or outside, matched up against the safety if you play man-to-man, and that's how they play. They don't get a lot of big plays. They really depend on ball control. So third down and medium is a huge down for Washington in this game. They got to have a good plan for that.
If Kendall Fuller can't go, and he's been on the injury report, hasn't practiced the first couple of days here this week, and it would be Emmanuel Forbes more likely than not. What would you make of them putting him right back into the lineup this week?
Well, I think they sat him for a reason. He struggled a little bit in tackling and in coverage from time to time. So, but he had some good games early, I thought. I thought he played well early in the season. He just got beat by two really good receivers, and A.J. Brown and D.J. Moore a couple times. But I don't think you're going to have to use him. And I knew that even though they benched him, eventually they're going to have to come back to him because he is a first-round pick and he has some talent. He's got great ball skills, and hopefully he can get a play early in the game, make a play early in the game to gain his confidence. But he has to make sure he does a better job of tackling, getting guys on the ground, maybe being a little bit less aggressive, not going for balls all the time. But that's kind of his DNA. He's made plays his whole career, and that's kind of how he does it. But he's got to make sure he secures a tackle first and pick his spots when he goes for the ball.
A lot of familiar faces on the Giant defense. Wink Martindale in the second year as their coordinator. But this is a defense that does not rank very high in any sort of the measurements. But I think they've got good players. What do you think?
They're their defensive line is pretty good. I think they have young corners, which kind of is an issue for them right now. But Wink does a good job as far as disguise the coverages and bringing blitzes and all that good stuff. And every NFL roster has good players on it, but they're probably, pass rush-wise, probably the bottom of the heap. They get their pressure based on blitzes that Wink likes to use, and he's very effective with them. But, you know, Thibodeau, he's got to play a lot better. I think he's underachieving this year as far as sacks are concerned. Dexter Lawrence is a heck of a player. Obviously, Leonard Williams is a heck of a defensive lineman. McKinney's a good safety, but, you know, they got to have better corner play, and they got to try to manufacture pressure a little bit more with those four guys, and Thibodeau's the main guy that's got to get it for them.
Yeah, I wonder, like, when you look at a team like the Giants, they're obviously banged up. They're 1-5. But they've also played, you know, the last four games, the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Dolphins, and the Bills. And I think their game against the Bills may have been their best game of the year on Sunday night. You know, that's something, you know, you can't really focus on the record when basically all their losses are to elite teams.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, you got to find a way to win some of those games. You got to be able to beat Seattle. So you got to win your home games. They did a great job against Buffalo. They really got screwed there at the end. That was a PI call, clearly. They should have got another crack at it, and they screwed up at the end of the half. But they're right there. I mean, they got blown out a couple times by Dallas, and they haven't looked very good. The biggest issue they have is consistently moving the ball and creating big plays. They don't have that big play guy. Jalin Hyatt's supposed to be the big play guy from Tennessee, but he hasn't really done that. He's made a couple catches deep, but Slayton's not getting deep. Wendell Robinson doesn't get open deep. They don't really have that deep threat. Saquon is the bell cow for him. He's got to be the guy to get the big play for him, whether it's on a screen pass or bubble screen or obviously run between the tackles or outside. So they're relying on Saquon for the big play because they don't have any other big play threat.
All right. What's your prediction Sunday?
Well, I think Washington should get this win, really. I just think they're a better all-around team. I think you know, the receivers should be able to get after these corners. I think Sam's got to obviously make the decisions and get the ball out. And this is a game, again, where just it's okay to punt and make the Giants go the long field against this defense. And this defense should dominate this offense for the Giants. They should not score very often. I mean, I'm sure they'll get a touchdown or maybe two, but they got to hold them to under 17 points. And I can remember when I was in Cincinnati and we had a young offense, I'd go into Zimmer and Paul Gunther, who are the defensive coaches, and I'd go in there on Friday afternoon after our practice and say, hey, what's the number? What do we got to get? And they say, hey, don't turn the ball over and just try to get 17 points. We'll win the game. I said, that's perfect. And that has to be known kind of because of your play calling. And the fact that third down and seven sometimes, you know, backed up, you might run a draw or a screen and punt and make them go the long field, you know, and not put your young quarterback in harm's way where he might force a ball and turn a ball over and flip the momentum or flip the field. So this is the type of game where I think it's okay for Washington to punt. Just don't turn the ball over. And I think they'll make enough plays offensively where they should be able to get a win in a pretty easy one. In fact, I'm taking Washington as my lock of the week.
Really?
Kevin, what do you think about that?
Well, it's the numbers up to three. You're okay laying the three?
I might bite down to 2.5. Can I do that?
Yes, you can, but you're gonna have to pay -125 on that. Maybe a little bit more.
I just think Washington, you know, 3-3, that also has, you know, played some tough teams and had some good games, and I think, you know, Sam's getting better and better, and I just think offensively and defensively, I just have a better team overall.
I mean, you said something, and I understand what you're saying about it's okay to punt. But you said, look, 3rd and 7, you may just run a draw and punt it. You got to recognize who you're playing. But it's not the way that Eric Bieniemy's called games this year. Now, he's gotten
to... No, he's not going to do that.
Yeah. He's gotten to the check down a little bit more here recently, you know, especially when they've been in field goal range. They haven't taken sacks on 3rd and 14, 3rd and 15. But on 3rd and 7, they're attacking with this kid. Do you care in the development of a young quarterback? Like, that makes total sense against the Giants on Sunday. Because they're probably not, you would hope, they're not going to be able to score more than 17 points with basically the same kind of offensive line that, remember, you guys had that year when you went to Seattle and somehow pulled it off. when you had like three guys that had just walked into the building the day before. I mean, that's basically what the Giants have up front on Sunday. But it certainly doesn't appear as if Eric Bieniemy is thinking week to week. He's thinking more long term. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I think, well, he's put a lot of trust in the Sam, and Sam has paid him off from time to time, but also the sacks rear their ugly head, and Sam's had some turnovers that I'm sure he wish he had back. That's something you just can't, you can't have the negative plays against a team like the Giants, and you can't give them any chance that they can win the game. You know what I mean? Any thought. You got to get them early. You got to try to get up on them early, make them play come from behind, and try to make them one-dimensional as soon as you can. Get them in third and long, and obviously get a lead and make them have to throw to catch up. If that happens, this game should get out of hand because they won't be able to block the four-man line that Washington has, in my opinion. So, but Eric is I think he's doing a good job with Sam, really. Obviously, there's some issues, but Sam's a young quarterback, and I think he's thrown a lot at him, and Sam has handled it mentally and physically. You just got to go out there and do it and try to eliminate the negative plays.
All right, real quickly, a couple of games. First of all, last night, I know you're a big Derek Carr fan and have been. Man, he looks – I mean, he got it going in the fourth quarter last night. They rolled up yards, points, and his tight end dropped the touchdown pass in the end zone that would have given them a chance to tie or maybe go for two and the lead there in the final 30 seconds. But he looks incredibly frustrated. I mean, he's getting on coaches. He's getting on receivers. I mean, he went after Olave last night. What do you think of Derek Carr in New Orleans right now?
He's obviously clearly frustrated, and Derek relies on precision. He's a lot like Kirk. Now, Kirk would not show that emotionally and go after coaches and players like that, but Kirk would get frustrated when people weren't in the right spot. That's what that's what quarterbacks like that depend on. These guys depend on accuracy and anticipation. If they're not where they're supposed to be or at the time they're supposed to be there, it's very frustrating. Obviously, he's frustrated with the play calling, some of it, and obviously the route discipline is not there for him, for his liking. You know, obviously I'm not going to, he's used to being with my brother from time to time, and that's what our offense is all about, is people being in the right spot, the right depth, creating separation, working leverages, and anticipation, and throwing with accuracy. And right now they don't have any separation, and they're not where they're supposed to be. And obviously Derek is clearly frustrated about that.
Lions at Ravens. Early this in the early window on Sunday, that's a hell of a matchup. Who do you like there?
You know, I like the Lions actually. You know, I think the Ravens will get. It'll be a great game. I think that's one of the games of the week, clearly, other than Miami and Philadelphia. But this will be a great game and a great test for Detroit. I just like the way Detroit plays. They're well coached. I think defensively is where I'm most surprised. I think Aaron Glenn's done a great job with that group. And obviously, Hutchinson's a great pass rusher. They're getting the pass rusher, getting good coverage. Losing Brian Branch, I don't know if he's going to play or not, but he was a big piece of how they stopped the run and all that stuff. But I still like Detroit. I just like what Jared Goff is doing. He's been amazingly efficient this year, getting the ball to different people. They have a good enough running game. I just don't know if Montgomery's playing or Gibbs. I don't know what's going on with the running game. They're kind of banged up. But I expect Goff to make enough plays to get the win. I still think Baltimore's still a work in progress offensively. Lamar's getting to know this new offense, and I think they'll get better and better. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Baltimore won. Don't get me wrong. I just think they're still struggling a little bit offensively.
There's some pressure on the Chargers and Brandon Staley this year, too. I mean, they got to the playoffs last year, and they lost that big lead at Jacksonville. They play Kansas City at Arrowhead in the 4 o'clock window after losing the Monday night game to the Cowboys. What is your overall take on the Chargers and Justin Herbert specifically?
You know, Justin didn't have his best stuff against Dallas for whatever reason. I've never seen Justin miss that many throws that are kind of simple for a guy like of his caliber to miss. Keenan Allen were just unbelievable that he missed. If he hits those two simple throws, it's a different game. I think they win the game. But I think getting Eckler back full strength is going to be a huge help for Justin, and they got to get the running game going. They couldn't run the ball between the tackles. They couldn't do anything last week. They got to get that going for them to have a chance against Kansas City because they want to keep them off the field. But Justin's a good player, and he just got to be more consistent, and they got to protect him a little bit better. Obviously, Dallas has a good pass rush. but they got to do something against Kansas City because they can rush the passer too. And their defense at Kansas City is playing very, very well.
Really
probably
well.
Top five in the league.
Really well.
Yeah, so it'll be a great challenge for them. And I just don't think they have enough right now to take Kansas City down.
All right, what about the Sunday night game, Miami at Philly? First of all, are you a Jalen Hurts guy or not?
Yeah, I think Jalen Hurts is awesome. He went to the Super Bowl, played extremely well that season, and he started out pretty good. I think the new coordinators hurt a little bit, and for whatever reason, Jalen's not quite making the decisions that he made last year. They're not as easy for him. Defenses are kind of clamping him down a little bit better. They're stopping the run. My issue with Philadelphia is they get rid of Miles Sanders, who's a bigger type back, and they replace him with two little guys, Swift and Gainwell. They just don't have the power to get those tough yards. You get the second and five. You know, they get a lot of second and tens. They're getting a lot of third down and longs, which they didn't really have last year. This is another team that's a ball control type team. I think last week their opening drive against the Jets was 19 plays. Against the Rams, they had four or five drives of 12-plus plays, and that's kind of the way they are, very methodical. The zone reads, the RPOs, getting the ball to A.J. Brown in space and letting him run. But Devontae Smith has got to come up and make some big plays for them. Moving forward, they got to get him more involved with the vertical game to get some chunk plays. He's the guy to get it for him. And obviously, A.J. Brown can do that, but they need Devontae to step up to get another viable option other than A.J. Brown, because I feel like sometimes Jalen just stares him down a little bit too much and then tries to run, and by that time, everything's shut down.
All right, so who do you like Sunday night?
You know, I think I'm taking Philadelphia. I think the only way to beat Miami is to have a good four-man rush and rush four and get home. And I think Philadelphia has those four guys, you know, with Hassan Reddick and Sweat and obviously Fletcher Cox. And I don't know if Jalen Carter is going to play or not, but those are four viable pass rushers. And that's what Buffalo did. They didn't rush five often at all. They played four-man rush and played different coverages to try to control, try to confuse Tua, make him hold the ball, and then get to him with the four-man rush. So Philadelphia has a chance to do that. It'll be interesting to see. But obviously, Miami's playing at a very high level. Mostert, he's a heck of a running back. He's doing a great job. And obviously, Tyreek is one hell of a player in Waddle. But I just think if you can mix in your coverages and get home with four guys, I think Philadelphia has a chance to do it. And I think Philadelphia's offense will get on track against Miami's defense.
Well, I mean, you know, I just pulled up the drive that you referenced. 19 plays, 91 yards, 9 minutes and 47 seconds. That would be their best defense Sunday night against
exactly
Miami.
Right. And I think they can do that against Miami. They can play ball control, keep Miami on the bench, and then obviously get home with four guys. That's the key against Miami. If you have to manufacture pass rush against Miami with five guys and play man-to-man, you got no chance.
What about the Monday night game? The 49ers off the loss, a little bit banged up. Minnesota, no Justin Jefferson last week. Do you give the Vikings a chance at home?
I do not, actually. I think Minnesota's struggling right now up front, and they're going to struggle protecting Kirk. And Kirk's going to need some time to get these guys open, and with some of those route concepts that they run at Minnesota, you know, the stacks and the bunches and all that stuff are great. But some of those plays take time to develop, and I don't think they're going to have a lot of time. Minnesota's offensive line is really struggling, I believe. And with the defensive front that San Francisco has with Bosa and Hargrave and Armstead, I just think it's too much for Minnesota. I think San Fran's offense will get back on track.
Who do you hear from during the season, if anybody, of your former coaches, thinking about, you know, Kevin O'Connell as an example? Do you talk to any of them during the season?
Yeah, I talk to him and Sean every now and then. And obviously, you know, Angelico's at Minnesota as well. And Les Phillips is at Minnesota. And Chris O'Hara's at Minnesota. And Jake Peets is at the Rams. So, I reach out to those guys every night. I just know how busy they are. I don't really talk to a lot of them very often. When the season's over, I'll get with them and see if they're alive and their heart rate is back to normal.
Would you rather be preparing a game plan or doing this podcast with me today?
Podcast.
No, come on.
unless I was at Miami, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. But how much do you miss it? This is your second
really
year away from it.
Much. You know, I miss the camaraderie with the players and some of the coaches. But I don't miss those long hours getting up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning and coming home at 10 and trying to squeeze in 4 hours of sleep or five and doing it over and over again, drawing up walkthrough cards and practice cards and dealing with all these injuries and everything like that. And in the media. I really don't really miss it that much, to be honest with you.
All right, you're on
a game day, and I miss the players. That's about it.
You're on a roll. You're giving out Washington buying the half point. You got to pay a price on that, but you're buying the half point and taking Washington minus 2.5. Actually, I see some 2.5s out there right now. I just pulled up.
Yeah, I think you got to give me 2.5.
I see some 2.5s. I see a lot of 3s now, though, but there are enough 2.5s out there. DraftKings right now has 2.5. My bookie's got 2.5 right now, actually. So there you go. You get him at 2.5. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. I'll talk to you. Thanks.
Jay Gruden, everybody, with me every Friday during football season. Well, football season, we are approaching, believe it or not, the halfway mark of the NFL season. We are beyond it in college football. If you're looking for a spot to watch football outdoors, consider the Bullpen. The Bullpen right next to Nats Park is a go-to spot, especially on these beautiful fall days, for outdoor football watching. Yeah, it's the ultimate outdoor destination to watch games, to listen to live music, hang out with friends. Admission is absolutely free. Of course, the Bullpen right next to Nats Park in the heart of Navy Yard is a spot that we've known for years is for baseball fans, but this year they're bringing all the NFL and college football action that you can handle. Get your guys together, wear your team colors, head on over to the Bullpen. They've got the games, the drinks, and the energy to make every moment unforgettable. Visit them today at thebullpendc.com to see the game schedule. Beautiful fall weekends, outdoor football watching, lots of fun with friends. The Bullpen right next to Nats Park, thebullpendc.com to see their game schedule. All right, we'll finish up the show with my smell test right after these words from a few of our sponsors. As always, the smell test is brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC for a cash bonus on your initial deposit. You have to use my promo code KevinDC to get access to it, but you'll get a cash bonus on your initial deposit if you use my promo code KevinDC. MyBookie is fair. You get paid if you win. You don't have to bet for 6 months before you're eligible to cash out. MyBookie's got fair point spreads, very fair pricing. If you've already got a site, use MyBookie as a second place. If you're looking for a place to bet on sports, you can't go wrong with MyBookie. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. All right, the smell test was not good last week. 2-8, one of the worst weeks I've had in a long time. In fact, not only was it 2-8, a lot of those games weren't even close. I mean, Tampa Bay wasn't close. As it turns out, the Panthers weren't close. They were up 14-0, had them plus 14. They lost 42-21. Wisconsin wasn't close on Saturday. NC State was a complete dud. And I'm off to an 0-1 start this weekend, because I gave out on the show yesterday with Tommy, I gave out an early week smell test selection, Marshall plus 3.5 at home against James Madison. Now, to be fair, Marshall's best player got scratched right before kickoff. The line went from 3.5 to 5.5. I was already on Marshall, and I'm not taking it back. I mean, that's on my record. I mean, I gave it out, and things like that happen, and sometimes, you know, it may work to my benefit. If I'd seen that earlier, I would have likely tweeted out, Marshall, don't play him, off my smell test. I'm not playing them. I had already played them too. They lost 20-9 to James Madison, who, by the way, I mean, I know I've got some JMU alum that listen to this show, because I hear from you guys a lot about talking about the JMU Dukes. You know, one of my oldest, closest friends, Steve Buckhantz, is a JMU Duke alum. He loves everything having to do with James Madison. It's such a great school, by the way, and I've been there many times. But wow, you know, they are 7-0. They won again last night. First time I think they've won in Huntington at Marshall. They're 7-0, but as you JMU fans and JMU people know, they're not eligible for a bowl game in their second year of FBS football. It's kind of a stupid rule. They're also not eligible to play in their conference championship game in the Sun Belt. I mean, it's a shame, really. I did read something this morning that said there is a path potentially to a bowl game, but that would only be the case if there weren't enough 500 or better teams to fill the 82 spots for the 41 bowl games. So if there aren't enough 500 or better teams, maybe JMU can get an exemption and get into a bowl game. But consider this. They're 7-0. The league's got some good teams, and they've got a couple of tough games left on their schedule. But if they go undefeated, they're not eligible for a bowl game. They would have been eligible in a normal year for them, starting next year, for a New Year's Six bowl. That's millions of dollars to the school and, by the way, to the Sun Belt. But great season that they're having. They've won 10 straight dating back to last year, and they've got the sixth longest active winning streak in the FBS. FBS, for those of you still not attuned to the way it's described these days, that's like the old Division One. But Marshall did not work last night, so we're off to an 0-1 start. So let's go to tomorrow. Let me just mention the game of the weekend, maybe the football game of the weekend, Penn State at Ohio State. Penn State's James Franklin is 4-14 against Ohio State and Michigan. This is a huge game for him. I'm familiar with the Penn State fan base. I mean, it is something else. My youngest son went and graduated from Penn State, graduated from there last year, not this past May, but a year ago May. And, you know, I was up there for multiple weekends when he was in school. And, I mean, the passion for Penn State football is through the roof. But, you know, they're not sold and haven't been sold on James Franklin for many years. This is an opportunity. This appears to be the best Penn State team that he's had. This appears to be the weakest Ohio State team in a while. They're undefeated, but they're not nearly as explosive offensively as they've been. They're better on defense, though. They're a much tougher and better team defensively. It's not in the smell test this game tomorrow. It almost was. I think Ohio State minus the 4.5 is probably the right side. Personally, I don't think Ohio State's that great, but I don't think Penn State's as good as some people think offensively. I'm not sold on the new quarterback, Aller. Their defense is outstanding, as is Ohio State's. I think this is just probably one of those games where home field advantage in Columbus matters. Probably things like special teams matter a lot. I'd lean Ohio State, but that's not an official pick. But I just wanted to weigh in on that game. No Maryland game this weekend. They have a bye. They're at Northwestern next week. But, you know, good day of college football tomorrow with Penn State, Ohio State leading it off. All right, the picks. So UCF is at Oklahoma in a Big 12 game. That's a Big 12 game. UCF is in the Big 12. They're getting their starting quarterback back. He was hurt early in the year. He played a little bit last week. Big difference maker. UCF can really score. The public loves Oklahoma in this game, laying 18. Last impression is always a big deal. Recent impression is always a big deal. And the last time Oklahoma played was in the Red River rivalry shootout, whatever they call it now. And they beat Texas, knocked off Texas. Dylan Gabriel, by the way, the quarterback for Oklahoma, playing against his former team. He's a transfer from UCF a few years ago. I like UCF plus the 18 points. I think they'll score. I think this will be, you know, a 38-31, 45-38 kind of a game in Norman. Let's go to the MAC for my next selection, a big-time matchup between the two leaders in each of the divisions in the Mid-American Conference, Miami of Ohio and Toledo. Miami of Ohio has one of the best teams they've had in a long time. Both teams are 6-1. Both teams lead their respective divisions in the MAC. This could be potentially a preview of the MAC championship game down the road. It's in Oxford, as in Oxford, Ohio, one of the most college towns there is in America. It's just the quintessential college Americana town, Oxford, Ohio. It's in the middle of nowhere. I've been there a few times. And it's about, I don't know, an hour and 15-minute drive from Cincinnati, something like that. But that place will be hopping in their stadium that probably seats, I don't know, 30,000, 35,000, whatever it is. Big game in the MAC. Toledo went from a one-point dog to a two-point favorite. There's a ton of sharp money on Toledo, and the public's backing the Miami of Ohio Redhawks. Used to be Redskins many years ago, the Redhawks. Give me Toledo minus the two. Auburn's at home catching 6.5 against Ole Miss. Ole Miss can really score, but they can't stop anybody. And the last time Auburn played at Jordan-Hare was 2 weeks ago when they nearly knocked off Georgia. They got run last week at LSU. I think LSU's the best offensive team in the country. I really do. They're terrible defensively. But they beat Auburn last week 48-18, you know, a week after Auburn was right there with Georgia. I think Auburn's defense shuts down Ole Miss. I think Auburn will score enough. The game's at home. They're getting 6.5 by the half point. Take Auburn plus the 7. UCLA is laying 17 at Stanford. UCLA got run last week by Oregon State. I had them. Didn't work out. I had them the week before against Washington State, and it did work. But Stanford, remember the last time we saw them, they were making that comeback from 29-0 down to beat Colorado 46-43 a week ago tonight. UCLA got beat badly by Oregon State. They're laying 17. That is a huge number for a team that really struggles to move the football and score points. They've got a very young quarterback. He is mistake-prone. I just looked at that line and I said, I mean, if UCLA was like 7 or 8 or 9 point favorites, anything double-digit was going to look funny to me against Stanford coming off that win. They're 17-point favorites. Give me UCLA. Lay the 17. The public's on Stanford. I think there's good reason why the public should want to be on Stanford. I'll be on the other side. Nevada plus 12.5 at San Diego State is the other play. It's a big public play for some reason, San Diego State. And there's major sharp money on Nevada. That line was 14. It's down to 12.5 right now. Let's go to Sunday. The Patriots are playing the Bills. And right now the Patriots are one of the biggest anti-public sides of the weekend. I'm just pulling up some information right now as, yeah. So New England's getting 8.5, and that line has essentially stood at 8.5 all week long. Remember, Buffalo had a difficult time scoring last week against the Giants, had a difficult time scoring until the fourth quarter the week before that against Tennessee. Maybe the play here is the first half, New England at home. But I'll take the Patriots plus the 8.5 on, you know, pure sort of contrarian principle. New England is the public's really down on the Patriots. And the public still thinks the Bills are a Super Bowl contender. So do I. These games in this division are always difficult. It's in Foxborough. I think some wind and some weather perhaps on the East Coast this weekend, maybe even in New Jersey for the game Sunday between Washington and New York. I'll take New England and the 8.5. The Bears, well, it looks like the kid from Shepherd College may be the starter. That line is super short with the Raiders now at 3-3. They're laying 2.5. I'll buy the half point and take the Bears at home. Baltimore and Detroit, one of the best games of the NFL weekend. The Ravens are 3-point favorites in that game. Everybody loves Detroit in this game. They are one of the biggest public plays by far. There is some sharp money on Baltimore, I am told. I'll take the Ravens and lay the 3 at M&T Bank Stadium. Also in the 1 o'clock window, sorry, but the Giants plus 3 are the anti-public side. There's some sharp money on both teams, but I just think this line reeks a little bit. I think Washington is a team that, believe it or not, some public bettors believe in. They beat Atlanta on the road last week. They were, you know, the game that they had against Philadelphia. The Chicago game didn't help matters, obviously, but the Giants are perceived to be an awful team and a decimated team injury-wise, which is all true. So the public is backing Washington at -2.5, -3. I'll buy the half point, although I can find a -3 out there right now. At my bookie currently, Washington is, let me find the updated my bookie line, 2.5-point favorites. I'm buying the half point there and taking the Giants plus the 3. By the way, and you heard my final score prediction in the open, 20-19 Washington. I've got them winning, so it's a pure happiness hedge bet here. I want the Giants to cover, but I want Washington to win the game outright. And look, if Washington wins big and the Giants don't cover, I'll be fine with that as well. The total, by the way, in this game this week is one of the lowest in the league. You know, Washington went from those first couple of weeks of the season having super low over-under totals to then it climbing after the Denver game when they're like, hey, they can score a little bit. And playing the Giants this week, the total is 37.5. The only other game on the board with a lower total is Bears-Raiders at 37. Bucks-Falcons is at 37.5 as well. I don't like the over or the under in this game, even though my final score prediction, 20-19, would send it just over the total. Two more games. The Broncos late afternoon at 425 plus 1.5 at home against the Packers, and the Chargers plus 5.5 at Arrowhead. The Chiefs are a big public play this weekend as well. I would lean Philly Sunday night, but I'm not playing it. And I do think when we come in here on Monday, Minnesota might be a smell test pick on Monday's show. But I'm going to hold off on that one right now. There's a lot of public money on San Francisco in that game. And there has been back and forth sharp money on that game. Initially, it went to 6.5, 6. Now it's back to 7. So I'm going to hold off on that one for now. All right, recapping. Marshall already in the books as a loss. Tomorrow, UCF plus 18, Toledo minus 2, Auburn minus 7, UCLA minus 17, and Nevada plus 12.5. On Sunday, the Patriots plus 8.5, the Bears plus 3, the Ravens minus 3, the Giants plus 3, the Broncos plus 1.5, and the Chargers plus 5.5. All right, that's it. Enjoy the weekend of football. Back on Monday.
The Washington Redskins offensive line is one of football's best, but today their reputation will be challenged by Lawrence Taylor and a fired-up New York defense. The Giants are confidently riding the crest of a 6-game winning streak. And with the right calls from Phil Sims, they hope to roll a 7 today. Also face some stiff challenges today. First, their defense must contain Washington's fleet receivers, like Gary Clark. And their unheralded pass blockers will have to contend with Dexter Manley, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Manley relishes the spotlight, and today it shines brightly in the season's biggest game. Ran the Giants to victory in their first meeting, but today's rematch is at RFK Stadium, where the Skins are hard to beat and where tickets are impossible to find. CBS Sports presents the National Football League. Today it's the New York Giants against the Redskins of Washington, live from RFK Stadium, sold out for the 157th consecutive time. And believe me, there is no place to play, no more enthusiastic setup than RFK.